This week in national politics began with another public hearing by the House Judiciary Committee. The plan for more hearings between now and Christmas is uncertain at this point. On Insight, I'll check in with Kate Irby, the California congressional reporter for McClatchy. She's following the news out of Washington this week and separate stories involving Devin Nunes and Duncan Hunter. If you're a California resident, you might have received a voter registration notice in the mail recently, or you will be receiving one. There are details to know to be registered for the March primary, and different counties have different rules. We'll talk about that today. Later in the hour, Duke Ellington's Nutcracker Suite. The music will be performed live by Byron Colburn's big band this Saturday in Davis. We'll sample some of the holiday jazz, and Byron will explain why the Duke chose Tchaikovsky. I'm Beth Ruriak. That's today on Insight. From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruriak. Thanks for finding us while we have been in the midst of another public hearing by the House Judiciary Committee. A half dozen Californians are on this week's panel. Separately, there are major storylines involving California Republicans Devin Nunes and Duncan Hunter. So let's get to Kate Irby, who covers the California Congressional Delegation for McClatchy. She's joining us by phone from Washington, D.C. Hi, Kate.
Hi, Beth.
So, of course, we're recording this conversation at the same time as more witnesses are being questioned. What are you hearing about the House plan beyond today, sometime between now and Christmas?
So we're thinking that the Judiciary Committee, or we're hearing that the Judiciary Committee will be drafting articles of impeachment within the week against President Trump. The Judiciary Committee then, according to the process, has to vote whether to advance those articles of impeachment. Right now, that seems pretty likely, at least on a party line vote, which Democrats do control the House. That would mean that those articles of impeachment would go to the House floor and can be approved by a simple majority. And right now, it is looking likely that that will happen before Christmas. The last day Congress is in session is December 20th, which is a Friday, and we're thinking they might be voting them out by then.
It's probably early to speculate on the shape of the trial that would come in January, but does that seem a foregone conclusion that we will have a Senate trial?
Yes. So Senator Mitch McConnell, who leads the Senate obviously right now, has said that he does plan to have a trial. And Senate rules dictate that the Senate can't really do anything once impeachment goes on their plate, that impeachment has to be a priority. They really won't be able to accomplish much else. So expect this to take up pretty much all of the Senate's time starting in January is what conventional wisdom seems to say around here.
How has talk or atmosphere shifted, Kate, as the hearings move from the Intelligence Committee in November now to the Judiciary Committee? And I guess now I'm speaking about the overall impeachment inquiry.
Sure. So the Intelligence Committee obviously was focused on the Ukraine allegations. So they laid out all the evidence for that specifically. And now we're turning to Judiciary, which does not have to only focus on Ukraine. They can focus on the Mueller report, where he was talking about obstruction of justice. They can focus on the issue of tax returns, of giving his children and his children-in-law special treatment within the White House. There are so many things the Democrats have been investigating that they are not sure if they want to include in impeachment. So it's become much less focused almost as we go into judiciary and less united, because Democrats have conflicting ideas about how they want to go about this, and Republicans are jumping on that. But it is, I would still definitely expect, regardless of what the articles look like, I would expect at least some of them to get to the House floor.
And late last week, all eyes and ears were on Nancy Pelosi. She held a press conference, made her announcement about the intention for the process on impeachment to move forward. And there was the controversy, or the big discussion, at least, about her response to a reporter's question about whether she hated the president. Then came the Sunday talk shows. Will you talk to me a bit about her place in all of this? It was even suggested today in the hearing that maybe she jumped the gun and declared the process farther along than it actually was. Bring us up to date on as we start a new week, what the thinking is about what Nancy Pelosi has done?
I would say don't underestimate where Speaker Pelosi is in all of this. She controls a lot of what is going on. Obviously, she publicly is pretty deferential to the committee chairs, in this case, Judiciary Committee Chair Nadler, but she is a very controlled leader. She knows what is going on within her caucus. She understands where the process is. So usually, and she's not known for jumping the gun. So I would say if she is saying expect articles of impeachment within the week, that's a pretty safe bet. It's possible that it won't happen. Obviously, Nadler does have the ultimate authority here, but I would say the chairs work very closely with Speaker Pelosi on all of this.
I want to shift to Duncan Hunter, the Republican from California's 50th district. His pleading guilty continues to be a big story. The charge was conspiring with his wife to illegally spend campaign dollars on personal expenses. So there's been some discussion about whether he would resign, whether he would cast a House vote. Now it sounds like he'll be resigning, he says, at the end of the holidays. What's the clarity there on what Duncan Hunter is choosing to do and about casting a vote?
So, yes, as you said, he's planning to resign after the holidays. The House Ethics Committee gave him a letter on Thursday that basically said if you vote in the House after your guilty plea, you would be subject to possible discipline by this committee, because there are House rules that say if you have been convicted or plead guilty to a crime where I believe if imprisonment is one to is over 2 years or something like that, or possible imprisonment. It's a weird little detail. But he is subject to that rule. So he, since he received that letter, has not cast a vote in the House. I would assume that he would not want to subject himself to possible further discipline, mounting on top of all of his other legal troubles when he is already going to be resigning. And that's where it seems to stand right now. The House Ethics Committee was not clear about what the penalties would be, so that I'm not sure about that. But it could include fines, could include early removal from the House. That wouldn't be subject to his discretion. It's unclear.
Do you know why that resignation didn't happen immediately or go hand in hand with the guilty plea?
There's some speculation that, or an accusation by someone running for Hunter's seat that he purposely didn't file earlier because of a primary deadline, which now leaves it up to Governor Gavin Newsom whether he wants to hold a special election. So Newsom could theoretically appoint somebody rather than holding a special election. And obviously Governor Newsom is a Democrat. Representative Duncan Hunter is a Republican. That is a pretty Republican district, so it's a complicated issue.
Yeah, I'm going to take a look at some notices we got last week from the Secretary of State's office, because there was some discussion about extending filing deadlines for a number of races in the state. So we'll follow up on that. By the way, I wanted to add that tomorrow I'm going to talk with Morgan Cook, the reporter from the San Diego Union-Tribune, who started the reporting that led to the story that ultimately led to the guilty plea by Duncan Hunter. So that's coming up tomorrow. Meanwhile, I'm in conversation with Kate Irby. She covers the California Congressional Delegation for McClatchy. So let's shift another gear, Kate, and go to Congressman Devin Nunes, whom you've wrote about extensively in the past. He, of course, had a starring minority role in the previous public hearings by the House Intelligence Committee. And now there's some question about whether he should face discipline. Will you explain the situation?
Sure. So obviously, Congressman Nunes is the top Republican on intelligence, as you just said, which means he has certain oversight powers in this impeachment investigation that he is in. And partially in charge of part of this investigation. So now subsequent reporting attributed to Lev Parnas's lawyer. Lev Parnas is someone who was involved with Rudy Giuliani in pressuring Ukraine officials to get political dirt on Joe Biden. Lev Parnas's lawyer has implicated Devin Nunes and said that Lev Parnas is willing to testify that he was trying to set up meetings for Devin Nunes, that Devin Nunes was having conversations with people, that he was involved in this, in these issues at the center of impeachment. And then we had call logs released by the House Intelligence Committee that shows that Devin Nunes had calls with Rudy Giuliani in April and with Lev Parnas in April. And Nunes has said, he talks to Giuliani. He's known Giuliani for 10 years, but he doesn't think that's what the subject of those phone calls were, and that he doesn't remember if he has talked to Lev Parnas. So that gets us to today, where now you have a lot of House members and House leadership, all Democrats, saying that they believe Nunes might face some discipline within their ranks. That could be a censure, that could be a reprimand. The Ethics Committee could investigate him. There's already a complaint about him into the Ethics Committee. So it's not clear what could happen yet. Leadership has not taken any actual substantial steps that I've seen. And the other issue on this is that Republicans are the ones who can remove him from his committee assignment. Mm. So that would be Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy. And he has indicated nothing but full-throated support for Nunes. I would not expect that to happen anytime soon. Any punishment against Nunes, at least right now, without more damning evidence, I would say would come mostly from Democrats, if not entirely.
Right. And they are both California Republicans. I want to ask if there are any other storylines around the Intelligence Committee hearings that you're following. And I'll note that this morning it was being noted by panel members that Adam Schiff was not present, that he was not going to be questioned. But what else are you watching?
Yeah, I don't expect that will change. I think Republicans have decided that they're going to use Congressman Schiff as a kind of boogeyman on this ever since the whistleblower reached out to his office. I would also expect Democrats to do the same on Nunes. I believe that they're going to continue talking about that and talking about the possible, his accused corruption in this case. And besides that, most of it has been taken out of the Intelligence Committee's hands. You might see people citing concerns with their investigations going forward, like those two examples, but they are no longer the focus of impeachment.
All right, Kate, anything else you're working on this week?
You'll have to wait and see. I'm always looking into what's going on with Representative Nunes for the Fresno Bee, but nothing to say yet, so we'll see.
Okay, thanks. Take care, Kate.
Thank you, Beth.
Kate Irby covers the California congressional delegation for McClatchy. Up next, we're going to shift to the topic of voting in the primary in California and some registration details you might need to know to be able to vote for the person and party of your choice. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. Welcome back to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. California's primary is March 3rd, not in June, as it has been. And to vote in the primary, you have to be registered by February 18th. Now, if you are already registered, but you've had a name change or your political party changed, you have to re-register. If you were a no-party preference voter and you want to vote for a presidential candidate, you're going to have to request a specific party ballot. We'll get to those details in a moment. Those are statewide general provisions, but specific voting procedures differ from county to county. So we're going to do a little sampling of what's happening across the region, starting with Courtney Bailey-Canellis. She's the Registrar of Voters in Sacramento County, and she's with me in the studio. Hi, Courtney.
Hi, Beth. Thank you.
This is rare that we're face-to-face.
Yes.
Usually we're in an election crunch and I'm just talking to you by phone. So I'm glad to have you in the studio.
Thank you.
So March 3rd is a presidential primary. And what makes everything different because of that?
So presidential primary elections are actually party specific. And in California, we only have party specific primaries every 4 years. And this means that voters will see the candidates on their ballot that are directly associated with their registered political party.
So Democrats will choose among Democratic candidates, Republicans, other parties likewise. And then there is the decline to specify or no party preference. So what happens in that case?
So for those voters that are referred to in the state as no party preference, but as you mentioned, also decline to state or even the term independent has been used, these are the voters that are not registered with a political party. So for all of those voters not registered with a political party, they will not see any presidential candidates on their ballot. But that doesn't mean that they don't have some choices.
All right. I want to review that because if you stay with no party preference, you're going to be able to vote for other races, but you will not see any candidates for the race for president, correct?
Correct.
However, if you want to be able to vote for president, you have to take a few steps or at least one step now.
Correct. So there is some action that is required for voters that want to request to vote a particular party ballot, again, only if they're not registered with a political party. And voters who are not registered with a political party may request to vote on the presidential nominees for a few parties only. And those parties statewide are the American Independent Party, the Libertarian Party, and the Democratic Party. And it's important to note that the reason why it's only just a few of the parties is because it's actually the party's decision. It's the party's choice whether or not they want those voters that aren't registered with a political party to help choose their nominee in the primary.
So you have a couple choices. If you're a no party preference, chances are you got a postcard already in Sacramento County, correct?
Yes. If you are a voter in Sacramento County that has not registered with a political party, you would have received a postcard asking you to, if you would like, to make a party selection or letting you know if you did want to re-register with another political party, you still have time.
And there's part of that postcard that you could complete and mail back. If you disregard it or do nothing, then you're going to get a vote-by-mail ballot in early February like everybody else, but it would not include candidates for president.
Correct. And so even after a later time, if you decide you would still like a ballot mailed to you with a political party that's allowing this crossover option, you can still email or call your county elections office. Also, you still have the opportunity to vote in person to request another ballot. In Sacramento County, that would be requesting a ballot at vote centers, but throughout the state, voters would be allowed that option at polling places as well.
This all might seem a little bit in the weeds for people who already know they're voting by a particular party. What percentage of all voters in the county end up being no party preference? How many people are we talking about?
We're talking about almost a third of the registered voters in Sacramento County are currently not registered with a political party.
And that word crossover means you're just going to move into choosing one particular party, whether it's American Independent, Libertarian, Democratic. Could be Republican, Green, Peace and Freedom.
So for the crossover, it does allow for you to vote for those presidential nominees for this election only. So it does not change a voter's registered political party. It just allows them to cross over for the presidential nominees. For the parties such as Peace and Freedom, Green, and Republican, they are not allowing the crossover option.
So what happens after this primary to someone who has been no party preference?
So after this primary, for those that are not registered with a political party, still, once the November general election comes, that voter will still have the opportunity to vote for any of the presidential candidates. It's only with these party primaries that are specific to the voters in that registered party. And of course, it's important to remember that the reason why we have primaries to begin with is so that that party can help make that decision on who they want to represent them in November.
Okay, let me fast forward a little bit to the registration process being done by February 18th. Now we come up to the vote-by-mail ballots going out in the mail. When does that happen?
Voters in Sacramento County, every registered voter, I should say, in Sacramento County, will receive a ballot in the mail for that first week of February.
Okay. And the ballots can then be returned through the mail, the postage is paid, or they can be dropped at these drop boxes, which we've gotten used to in the last 1 to 2 elections.
Correct. We will have 58 drop boxes throughout Sacramento County that voters can return their ballot starting the day that they receive them in the mail if they wanted to vote early. In addition, we also have multi-service vote centers set up for voters to return their ballot that way if they choose.
Courtney, you were a key player in the transition that some counties made from polling places to vote centers, and that was Sacramento County's response to the 2018 Voters' Choice Act. There are other counties that operate similarly to what we've just been talking about with Sacramento, and who are they?
So the counties for our neighbors that went with us in 2018 is Nevada County. We also have a lot more counties moving forward in 2020, including El Dorado, Amador. We also have Fresno, and a few very large counties such as Los Angeles, Orange, and Santa Clara are all adopting this new model where every registered voter receives a ballot in the mail. And if they still want to vote in person, they can at any vote center location.
All right. Since you mentioned Nevada County, let's check in up there. I do have with me in the studio Courtney Bailey Canellos. She's the Registrar of Voters for Sacramento County. And on the phone right now is Pascal Fussholer in Nevada County, California. She's the editor and co-founder of Ubinet. Hi, Pascal.
Good morning, Beth.
So pick up at that point with Nevada being an early adopter of the Voters' Choice Act and what happens with the voting process up there.
Yeah, so Nevada County, just like Sacramento County, adopted the Voters' Choice Act in 2018. And we had even a little more training because we had also 2 special elections, both for state Senate and state assembly. So Nevada County voters are already pretty used to the vote-by-mail process. Then again, for starters, Nevada County already had a very large percentage of permanent absentee voters, as they were called way back then. And also the turnout has been consistent. Normally, Nevada County has a higher voter turnout than the statewide average. So, for example, in 2018, the statewide average was about 65%, but Nevada County was close to 80% turnout. So that
wow.
works really well in Nevada County. And like Connie said, the same thing is happening here in Nevada County. The postcards that are especially for voters registered with no party preference, they have gone out and they should be dropping in registered voters' mailboxes sometime this week.
How's the website situation for information for everybody, Pascal?
Nevada County is going to set up a special section, and they will do much more outreach as well for this for both the primary and the general election. And then we have, given where we are, there are even some contingency plans in case, especially for the general election, if we were to suffer another PSPS. So Nevada County is already working on getting that together, and the county is planning as if there would be a PSPS event during the November 2020 election, which is, of course, expected to have a high voter turnout. And the elections office has already been meeting proactively with the CEO's office to discuss logistics, and they have identified facilities with backup power, and plans are well underway to support a successful election.
You're talking about a public safety power shutoff, and Nevada County wouldn't be the only county in California susceptible to that. And that training has come from the top. I understand that the Secretary of State's office has reached out to assist, but you were in the midst of heavy power shutoffs, so it's a serious concern there, isn't it?
It is absolutely a serious concern because the Nevada County, of course, had, I believe we had seven public safety power shutoffs. We were in the area of seven public safety power shutoffs, with three very large ones in October and one that was slated but ultimately did not happen in November. So those plans are definitely an integral part of the planning process, and there are many, many meetings that have already been taken place. And there's also, of course, the education component. What happens if your vote center, because we have vote centers as well, what happens if a vote center does not have backup power? However, I have to say that the elections office is trying to get all the vote centers with backup power, and if needs be, they are planning on actually getting generators to the vote centers so that people can vote during the days preceding and, of course, on election day.
All right, Pascal, let's call this the first of a number of conversations we'll have during this upcoming election year, okay?
All right, then.
All right, thank you so much. That was Pascal Fussholer from Ubinet in Nevada County. By the way, Courtney, same thing for Sacramento County with contingency plans for power problems?
Absolutely. Not only are we worried about the planned public shutoffs, but also just knowing now that the primary is in March, we could have flooding, we could have all sorts of other disasters that might be unforeseen that we normally wouldn't experience in June. So we have definitely changed our contingency planning to accommodate that.
All right, now let's skip across the land a little bit and check in with Jeffrey Berry. He is Chief Deputy Clerk Recorder Assessor of Yolo County, Davis being the biggest city in Yolo County. Hi, Jeffrey. Good to talk to you again.
Good morning, Beth. Good to talk with you again.
So what information has gone out or is going out to voters in Yolo County?
Well, a lot like my compatriots there have talked about. You know, we're getting those notices out to those NPP voters and letting them be aware of what parties are allowing crossover, and for them to get their information to us as soon as possible so that as we start to get ready for the vote-by-mail period, we can assure them that they'll get the correct ballot.
All right. What's happening for voting, the process in the county? Where are you in the transition to vote centers and vote-by-mail ballots?
Well, we're still very much in the wait-and-see for the vote center right now. So we're still going to have our 96 physical polling places open, and we will have our election office open. But because of the demand for the conditional voter registration process, these two coming up elections, we will have a satellite office open on the UC Davis campus to accommodate a lot of those students who in November 2018 had failed to register to vote on time and then ended up getting in a car or Ubering or taking a bus here to Woodland to CVR here at our office. So we recognize that the UC State Davis students are a large part of our population, so we're going to accommodate their needs right there on campus for March and November 2020.
You answered one of my questions there with a large group of voters possibly being first-time voters, first-time registrars or registering. What about volunteers? How do you do in that respect with the engagement in the process?
Well, we work very proactively with the chancellor and his team at UC Davis to get together and do some not just regular announcement boards and that kind of stuff, but we work with the chancellor to do a PSA that's actually, we try to broadcast at some of the events there on campus, and that runs on the campus network so that they know that, hey, this is the time that's coming up, and it's actually our registrar, Jesse Salinas, and the chancellor working together in that video to get the information out to students. And then anyone that would like to work for us or wants to be a poll worker and help us out, we take as any applications that we can get and pursue them actively.
Jeffrey, I'll ask you a question that maybe Courtney has to add some information to in here. But what happens for a first-time voter in this election with regard to that no party preference or decline to state? Is that an option at this point in registering in Yolo County, is it, Jeffrey?
Well, right now, if they come in and that's what they want to register, we have to make them aware of that for this upcoming election, they will have to choose something or else they won't be able to, you know,
vote for president.
Right. You know, so we let them know at that time. Those that are still coming in through the DMV or online right now, we still then have to go that extra step to get that notification out to them and let them be aware of what, you know, what their choice right now and why we have to do it this way.
It's probably that same way in Sacramento County, isn't it, Courtney?
Correct, yes. We want to make sure that voters, whether it's your first time or your 50th time, that you're aware of what the options are and that you make sure you are registered the way you want to be with the upcoming election.
We were talking about volunteers again to Sacramento County. Courtney, what's the situation with volunteering?
We are always looking for volunteers. We like to say it takes a village to create an election. But the truth of the matter is it takes thousands of people to put on an election in Sacramento County. It used to be several thousand. Now with the new model, it's a couple thousand. And we are always looking for folks to assist with helping to pick up ballots and also working at the multi-service vote centers over multiple days.
February 18th is the statewide date to be registered. So, Jeffrey, what's the local ballot in Yolo County going to look like?
It's going to be kind of busy, actually. We've got several referendums going inside of Davis, West Sacramento. We have a couple city councils up for election as well. And we have some supervisor races right now that actually have not the incumbents actually have challengers. So it's going to be very interesting as we get into this election here to see how our little local politics, our dynamics potentially change.
Well, same thing that I said to Pascal, Jeffrey, and to Courtney. I'm so glad to connect with you at the beginning of this process because it's going to be a very busy year. And I think we can't stress enough that there are changes, that if a voter has done something for many, many years one way in the past, it doesn't mean that it's the same way this year, right?
Most definitely. You can't assume it as that it's always the status quo is current. So with all that's going on, you want to make sure and double check that you're registered to vote, make sure that you're aligned with the right party if you so choose to have one, and just be in contact with your elections office, because if you really feel that this is important to you, go ahead, reach out, take the time, and we will always answer your phone call.
All right, Jeffrey, it's a pleasure. Thanks a lot. Happy holidays.
Thank you. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, that's Jeffrey Berry from Yolo County. He is Chief Deputy Clerk, Recorder, and Assessor. And Courtney, let's wrap this up with resources for people. Of course, in each county, you can go online to your county voter information website. Statewide, though, there are a number of resources.
Absolutely. The Secretary of State's website has some great information, including a website that's howtovoteforpresident.sos.ca.gov to really help explain in detail what the options are for voters and what voting in a party primary actually means. And as Jeffrey mentioned, it is important to stay in contact with your local elections office. Make sure to check those materials, whether it's the voter information guide or other notifications, letting the voters know how they're registered to make sure they are registered correctly.
It's easy to do it online, too. You can just push the button and make sure or verify whether you're registered as well.
Absolutely. So in the state and also I think most counties, there might be a few small counties that don't have the option, but most counties have the ability to verify your voter status online. But also with the state, My Voter Status, it is a great resource to be able to confirm your information. So it doesn't take long at all to make sure you're registered correctly. And if not, to re-register and get that updated.
All right. Before I let you go, because you are the chair of the Sacramento County Voting Accessibility Advisory Committee, what are the issues you're most concerned about going into this election? And that's in terms of the overall picture of working with voters, making sure everybody that wants to vote can cast a ballot.
Exactly. We really want to make sure we do what we can to diminish any sort of barriers to voting. And one is information and making sure the voters have the information to be able to participate in the election. And two, also letting them know the expectations of what to experience and what what it will look like, either voting by mail or voting in person. We are encouraging voters to vote early. We are expecting lines on Election Day at our vote centers. So we want to get out the messaging now to vote early if you can, to make sure you have plenty of time to cast that ballot.
Well, it's the first presidential election with the new system with the vote centers. So in one sense, you have expectations. On the other, you don't know what to expect, really.
That's true. I'm grateful Sacramento County tried this first in 2018, but with the increased turnout, with the different party options, it will be a little bit different. So we want to give voters the opportunity to vote early and let them know, please don't wait till the last minute.
I'm happy to talk to you in person. Happy holidays. This might be the last time we see each other through the general election.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks a lot. Great information, Courtney. That's Courtney Bailey Canellas. She is the Registrar of Voters in Sacramento County. We're going to post links at capradio.org/insight. And once again, the deadline to be registered to vote in California's March primary is February 18th. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio. This is Insight on Cap Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. For a jazzy take on the holidays, Duke Ellington's Nutcracker Suite is a classic recording. Just listen to a little bit of Sugar Rum Cherry, which is Ellington's take on the Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy. Byron Colburn and his big band will perform that music live December 14th in Davis. And Byron's joining us in the studio. Hello.
Good morning, Beth.
Glad to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Duke Ellington with Billy Strayhorn decided to play Tchaikovsky. How did that happen?
Well, I don't know so much insight on it, but I do know I saw a little interview with Duke online, and he basically used the word, he had a lot of humor in him, but he used the word parlay and said, we wanted to parlay this music together. So for me, it was an interesting thing of fusing classical and jazz together, which you don't usually see. It's kind of usually two different worlds with, you know, either classical or jazz. And sometimes they kind of butt heads in terms of musicians and things like that. So it was a very unique thing for them to come about. And it really took this music into a whole new audience.
Yeah, say more about that, because
sure,
it might have been a classical music ballet,
right,
arena where people knew the Nutcracker Suite.
Yeah, so the original ballet called The Nutcracker was composed by Peter Tchaikovsky. He's one of the most famous classical composers in the history of music. He was a Russian composer who passed away a little before 1900. But he had a lot of famous works, including Nutcracker, also pieces that people might not know that he did called Swan Lake, Sleeping Beauty, Romeo and Juliet, and also 1812 Overture, some of his most famous pieces. He wrote this ballet called The Nutcracker back in the day, and it's been popularized. It's still very popular today with you know, some of the most famous ballets in the world performing it, as well as youth. I grew up in Davis and performed in the Nutcracker out there in the Veterans Memorial a couple times as an actor or whatever when I was a little kid. And a lot of kids still do that. It's a really fun experience. So this music has been around for quite a long time. You know, it's over 100 years old. And then in 1960, Duke Ellington and Billy Strayhorn collaborated to do like a jazz interpretation of this music. And so it, for me, it took it in a whole different direction. And I had grown up on this music as a kid. And then when I heard it on this album, it was called Three Suites, which was a combination of the Nutcracker and some other ones. But it was first just released as the Nutcracker Suite. And when I heard this, I was like, whoa, this is incredible. You know, this whole different take on this music. So it was really quite brilliant.
I'm talking with Byron Colborne. You might know him from Element Brass Band. And we're talking about his big band, though, which is going to perform the music to from Duke Ellington's Nutcracker Suite. Let's listen to another clip, and we'll talk about it afterwards.
Swing
and ballet at the same time.
Right. That's why it's a very unique fusion of ballet and jazz. So yeah, that was the Dance of the Floridoras, also known as the Waltz of the Flowers, when Tchaikovsky wrote it. And yeah, it really is a dance. And I think we're going to maybe be doing that one as our closer. We'll see. I'm still kind of working out the set list. But it's a really fantastic chart that I believe Billy Strayhorn arranged that one. And yeah, this was just a really great album that Duke and Billy collaborated on. You don't mind if I tell you a little bit of the history of that, do you?
No, go ahead.
Okay, so I mean, many people have heard of Tchaikovsky and many people have heard of Duke Ellington. But for those that might not know too much about Duke, he's one of the most prolific composers ever in America. He's has over 1,000 compositions, which is pretty incredible. And he teamed up with his collaborator, whose name was Billy Strayhorn. They met in 1938. And Billy, they were kind of like peas in the same pod, like their minds kind of thought the same. And Duke would kind of use Billy Strayhorn in a positive way to kind of complete his thoughts, so to speak. And sometimes he would put an idea to Billy and Billy would make a whole tune out of it, or vice versa. They would bounce off each other like that. So, but also Billy kind of was in Duke's shadow because Duke was the band leader. He would joke sometimes on stage that, you know, Billy does the work, but I take the bows and stuff like that. You know, so it was definitely love and respect, but also I think, you know, I wasn't in his shoes, but I think it was probably hard for Billy Strayhorn to kind of always be in that shadow. And this album in particular was pretty cool for me when I read up on that the original album cover had Billy Strayhorn's picture along with Duke and both their names on the front cover. So I think that was a really nice honor and well-deserved for Billy Strayhorn. And the more I got into this music, I realized that he actually arranged most of the arrangements on this album, the Nutcracker Suite, but again, Duke gets most of the credit. A lot of the tunes that Duke wrote over the years actually were composed by Billy Strayhorn, you know, so tunes like Take the A-Train and things are some of his most popular tunes. So there's a lot of history in this music, a lot of history in that band. They worked together for over 25 years, so it's a pretty incredible team that they had going on right there.
Let's listen to a little more music. Here's another track from Duke Ellington and Billy Strayhorn's Nutcracker Suite. You can hear that music live, Byron Colburn and his big band performing December 14th at the Richard Brunell Performance Hall. It's a 7 o'clock show in Davis. What made you decide to commit to this music, and how big is your big band now?
Well, on the poster it says 18 musicians. We actually added one more because there was so much prominent clarinet in this music that we added Mr. Levi Sailua into the mix.
Oh,
so we're going
to
bring a whole 19 musicians. I grew up in Davis and did the Davis High School Jazz Band out there. And that's when I really first started checking out and playing big band music. And I continued to do that for a long time in college and whatnot. And I was doing a lot of reading when I was out in Boston in school out there, and just really soaking up this music. And then several years went by after I graduated college, and I was just kind of like, well, I'm not really playing a lot of this music anymore. You know, and I was not that I was not playing. I was doing lots of other things, but it's hard to put a 18-piece band together and, you know, rehearse that and make it strong. You know, it takes a lot of work. So I understood, you know, why a lot of people weren't doing that. But it kind of motivated me, and I missed it. You know, I missed what I was doing in school. So I was like, okay, well, maybe I could do this. And I was already doing things like Element Brass Band and a lot of other projects. So it was a little daunting at first to be like, do I really want to take this on? Because it's not easy, you know, even to just rehearse that many musicians and get them in a room together, let alone get the caliber of people that you need to pull this music off.
Which and there are expectations with this music,
sure, it's
too.
Not just something that you just read down
right.
One time. You know, you really got to get inside the music and really feel it. It's not easy reading. There's a lot of interpretation to it as well to really bring the nuance of it out. So, yeah, I'm very, very fortunate to be working with all the musicians that are in my band. And it's just it's been a real treat for me to kind of resurrect my education, so to speak, and keep going forward with this music.
Duke Ellington was on piano. Who do you have on piano?
On piano, we have Mr. Dave Bass.
Okay.
For those that don't know, he's one of the heavyweights in town.
He's fantastic. A regular here on Inside.
Good, yeah,
so
he should be.
Yeah,
he just
here.
Put out a great album of his own, and which you can check out. That's usually getting airtime on this station, which is wonderful.
Hey,
and,
Byron, there are nine tracks on the original Nutcracker Suite. How many, by Duke Ellington, how many is your big band doing?
We're doing the whole suite. So if you come, you're going to hear that whole album. And if you haven't heard the album, check it out ahead of time to, you know, get your palate wet. But we're going to bring the whole concert to you, as well as a bunch of other great arrangements by other arrangers and composers. Tunes like Little Drummer Boy and Christmas Time is Here by Vince Guaraldi. So some real favorites in there. We've got a vocalist, Elizabeth Npinko, who's going to be singing some really great charts. And if you haven't heard her, she's really wonderful. So come on out and check her out as well.
Well, I think we're going to close with Peanut Brittle Brigade, which,
wonderful.
I mean, every song is recognizable and popular from this Nutcracker Suite. I am really glad you reached out to us about this music, and good luck with the Byron Colburn Big Band and the performance this Saturday.
Thanks so much for having me, Beth.
That is Byron Colburn. And again, Saturday, December 14th at the Richard Brunell Performance Hall on 14th Street in Davis. There are Eventbrite tickets, but we'll post a link with more information. That's Insight for today. I'm Beth Ruyak. Thanks for joining us. Enjoy the music. What a way to start the week.